Zodi is a beautiful and charismatic woman with a desire for luxury that lies just beyond her means. But she is also damaged, haunted by the demons of her past, turning to sex, tranquilizers, and alcohol to cope. We're going to be talking with one of her daughters, Zoe Nicholas, today. She was a victim of childhood abuse and grew up with a parent suffering with substance abuse issues. Her story of survival and triumph is encouraging, insightful, and uplifting for all who hear her speak. She's enthusiastic, delightful, and filled with hope. And she helps her audience transcend past hurts and drive out of the darkness into the light. Zoe, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Thank you for inviting me, Wynn.
Your book is called Thriving in the Dark, A Childhood Memoir. And I talked to you yesterday, and we chatted about your life and your book. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I want the people to understand is if you have a parent or spouse or lover who is addicted to various different kinds of things, you have to be careful that you don't suffer as a result of it, because most people who are in those kind of relationships do suffer. And you were suffering many different ways, and we'll talk about that. But I want to talk about one time driving in the dark. Will you tell our audience about that experience?
Sure, Wynn. When I was 11, my mother, Zodi, decided to take a lark and get a vacation for her nerves. And she wanted to drive to Wenatchee from Seattle at 11 o'clock at night. And I knew there was no stopping her, because once she got an idea like that, if you said that she was too looped to drive, she would take it as a personal affront and drive anyway, just to show them. So I couldn't talk her out of it. So we ended up driving late at night, and in the middle of the mountains, after a very nerve-wracking drive, she pulled over and she had a seizure, which means she just essentially passed out. And she said she was too ill to drive and that I had to drive her to Wenatchee. And I was so conditioned to always do what she wanted and take care of her that I didn't even have a second thought. I got behind the wheel of a 1952 Buick convertible. It was huge. I was so small, I had to grab the wheel and pull myself up to the edge of the seat and reach forward with my toes so I could touch the gas in the brake. And I could only see the road from beneath the steering wheel and over the dashboard. And I drove, and I followed the white line all night long. And I ended up in downtown traffic in Wenatchee at dawn, and I couldn't pull over to let my mother drive. And she kept telling me to turn right into this traffic. And I remember watching a woman with a huge, round mouth screaming because I was barreling toward her car. But I managed to get the car turned. And then Mom said, turn again. And I couldn't see where to turn. There were concrete blocks in traffic. So I froze. I couldn't move. I was like a stick figure attached to the wheel, and my feet were glued to the floor, and we just bumped a little construction block. And my mother was conscious, and she just screamed at me that I was stupid, stupid, and get out. And she parked the car, and I remember standing there. I was covered in sweat, and I was nauseous and shaking, but I was alive. That's how she hurt me.
Yes. Now, this brings up an interesting point. Addiction, what we're talking about your mother right now, or anybody that's listening, is caused by, the primary cause is low self-esteem and lack of consciousness, lack of spiritual understanding. Would you say that your mother had low self-esteem?
Oh, most definitely. She had a very low self-esteem. She blamed herself for the death of her beloved first husband, and that augured her into a life of gambling and sex and alcohol and barbiturates. And my sister told me that after her first husband passed, that she was never the same again. And she would say she didn't deserve having anybody good after the love of her life died. Yes, she was abused herself. Her father used her for sexual gratification up until my cognizance, and then also her mother accused her of adultery with a stepfather. So my mother was hurt on many fronts, and she found addiction early on and stayed with it.
Yes. And the other cause, the lack of spiritual development and understanding, would that fit her also?
I think it was she felt so bad that I think she felt that God couldn't love her, that she didn't deserve it. So she didn't turn to faith and turn to the Lord until, according to my sister, a few days before her death. But she was so down on herself, she couldn't believe that the Lord did indeed love her. But she did turn, according to my sister, just before she died. But I was not around when that happened.
Yeah. One of the most self-esteeming things that a person could know is that they are a child of God. Because if you are a child of God, then you have some of God's characteristics, and God never made anything bad. He never made any mistakes. But for all...
Well, there's the aardvark.
Yeah. Well, even aardvarks have a pleasant side. But for everybody that's listening today that hasn't made this spiritual connection, if you understand that indeed you are a spiritual child of God, and you're related to God and spiritually in those ways similar, then you're never again going to think of yourself as a worthless piece of meat, somebody that doesn't deserve anything. And when you can get that in your head, you're going to be taking this first step toward ending and curing your addiction. And so you give us a great example of that. You had this alcoholic, barbiturate-taking mother who made your childhood miserable. And in spite of that, you went on to get a college education, become an author, a speaker, and everything. So whoever's listening today, don't think that there's no way that you're going to be able to get out of your situation. You told me yesterday that there were three important lessons that you learned from this experience of living with an addict. And I want you to tell our audience today what those lessons were.
Well, one of the lessons I learned was not to believe Zodi, and not to do the things that she did, because they were self-defeating and destructive, and didn't get the outcome she wanted. the second thing I discovered was that if I listened to the words of my adopted family, and particularly Margaret, my mom, she's like my good angel that sits on my shoulder every day. And if I listen to her voice, I am probably doing the right thing, going the right way. And so my life, to answer your question, my second life experience from this is that I pick and choose what I take from Zodi and keep, and I take from Margaret and I keep it, and I make a blend of their best qualities. And so I take what I like and I leave the rest, like the craziness and the booze and all of that. And I'm happy with that. But the one thing that I do keep a hold of from Zodi is that she always insisted that you must have real jewelry, because in a pinch, you can always hawk it. And so I have become a lifelong addict of beautiful jewelry. So anything sparkly, and I'm a goner. But those are the things that I take to heart. I listen to Margaret. I don't listen to Zodi. And I buy real jewelry.
Okay, so let me fill our audience in. You were adopted by foster parents. You're at age 18, and your new mother, her name was Margaret, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, but, you know, I remember back that you said an important lesson that you learned as a child, which had to do with your addicted mother having so many boyfriends come in, was that you learned to stay away from dangerous men.
Yes, yes.
And give our audience a tip, some things that you learned about as a child, as a woman, staying away from dangerous men.
Well, I think because I was a small child, I watched people very carefully, and I looked for body language that told me if someone was getting ready to take a punch, or if my mom was whacked out on drugs, I could see it in her body stance. So as a small child, I watched the adults very, very carefully. And when I get my antenna triggered that someone is a danger, or they're lying, or they get my antenna tingling, I go away from them. I refuse to let any man hurt me physically. No one touches me that I don't want to be touched.
Zoe, you know, internet dating is a multi-billion-dollar business, and chance of a woman going out on a date with someone who has evil on their mind is kind of likely, and everything like that. You were talking about intuition, and I think that that's the best thing that a woman can do. When she has intuition that a man might be dangerous, might be evil, might want to hurt her, she needs to get away from him as quickly as possible. Do you agree?
Immediately, yes, if not sooner. Get away.
That's right.
And go to safety. Go to certifiable safety.
And so many people, you know, feel like, well, I don't know that this person is like that or whatever. I'm embarrassed to do something like that. It's not worth your life.
No. And it isn't worth your life.
It's something that you learned as a child, as you were growing up. Mm-hmm. When you see those red flags, do something about it, right?
Yes, definitely. And one other thing that helps me, that has helped me in my past, is that I listen to that little voice in my head that tells me to get away. And I believe it was, I believe the voice of God four times in my life, three as a child and once as an adult. And because I listened to the Lord, I was saved. So listen to the little voice in your head, because the intuition is there. He is inside us. We are His children. Listen to the Lord. He'll talk to you.
Absolutely.
That's what I think.
Okay, your book is called Driving in the Dark, A Childhood Memoir.
Mm-hmm.
And tell our listeners how they can get a copy of this really good book.
Oh, thank you, Wynn. Yes, it is on Amazon. You know, you just go into Amazon and you can buy the soft back book, or you can go on to Amazon and get the ebook. And both are available.
Sure.
And you can get it anywhere on Kindle Direct Publishing, internationally, for any English-speaking person. Those English-speaking countries, you can get my book.
Okay, great. You know, I wrote a book called Freedom from Addiction, and
mm-hmm.
the purpose of this book is to help people in the world who have addictive behaviors and problems as a result of it to be able to cure themselves of that terrible disease. And
mm-hmm.
if they would like to go to my website, freedomfromaddiction.info, don't put .com on there, put .info, they can get
mm-hmm.
more information about that.
Okay.
You got into the court system, and you got adopted out as a nearly adult at age 18 to
mm-hmm.
foster family. What is the important thing that you want to tell our audience about that experience?
When you're a foster child, you're a ward of the court until you're 18. And suddenly, on my 18th birthday, I was neither fish nor fowl. I did not feel I was adult enough to be totally emancipated. I was still working on healing. I wasn't ready for the real world. I was still healing. And I turned to my foster parents, and I explained how I felt. And I said, well, why don't we just adopt each other? And they said, that's a great idea. And so we went as a family, and we got me adopted, and I stood in a judge's chambers, and he had the black robe, and I had to sign the documents and swear on a Bible that this was my intent, and I was not being pressured into it. And then he shook my hand, and I had a brand new family. So it was an interesting time.
Yeah. Did you change your name as a result of that?
Yes, I did. I kept my first name as my mother gave it to me, Mary Zoe, but I put in my middle name, Carmichael, to give honor to my biological father and just acknowledge I know where I came from. And then I added my my adopted family's name. And when I got married, oh, good grief, Mary Zoe Carmichael Dimmick Nicholas. That is just way too much name for anybody. So that's why I go by Zoe Nicholas. I have way too much name. But yes, I changed my name at that point.
Well, as we were talking and I was asking you about your purpose, your mission in life, you were explaining
mm-hmm.
to me about advocacy for older children's adoption. Tell me why that's important and you're passionate about that.
Thank you. Well, I think in a broader range, my mission is to help survivors of child abuse and to support the people who love them. But it really calls to me the fact that in the United States alone, there are 100,000 foster kids that just age out of the system at 18. And it's wrong. They still need to be loved and cherished by a family. We all need that. And so I'm trying to work to draw people's attention that it's the older kids from 2 to 18 that need families. And I just want to help everybody who is a survivor of child abuse know that there's a way out, and I want to support the people that love those wounded folks. And that's why I'm interested in this.
Great mission. I think that unconditional love is what we need in the world. There's lots of love that's conditional, but it doesn't do the same thing for a child's system, their spiritual system, as unconditional love. If you only get praise to when you do really good, and most of the time you get yelled at or told that you're stupid or whatever, that is going to almost guarantee that your child is not going to have enough self-esteem to stay away from addiction.
So yes.
If you as a parent want to do what's best for the child, you'll remember that unconditional love is the way to raise your child.
Mm-hmm. May I expand upon that point? It was drawn to my attention yesterday that Margaret, as a foster parent of a very troubled little me, she never took it personally. She let the emotions that I was dealing with bubble out and lash out sometimes. I used to walk in my sleep and I overate, and all of these different problems that I had, she just let them be, accept them, accepted me, loved me, and because of that, I healed through it. And I think it's Margaret's story more than anything else that is so astounding, is that she had the presence of mind to give that unconditional love. It was so desperately needed by the little me. And then later in my life as an adult, I got the same love. She was my angel.
Yeah, angels come in many different packages, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Zoe, did you ever have children yourself?
Yes, I was able to have a young son, and now he's a grown man with children of his own. And every year, it's amazing. I get smarter and smarter, according to him. So I'm so glad that he is a good father, and he doesn't show any of the signs of the craziness that was in my background. And for that, I am so grateful to God. I wanted the cycle to stop with me.
Well, I think that the key there, or one of the keys, is that you gave him unconditional love, which you started off by not getting, but finally got yourself, and you transferred that on to him.
He's a great guy. I wouldn't tell you that he didn't push my buttons and he didn't get swatted here and there, but by and large, a wonderful young man, and I'm so glad that my husband David and I were a unified front, and together between us, we made a normal human being.
Well, when a person thinks about what is my mission in life, mm-hmm. it can be anything that you're passionate about that helps other people. But mm-hmm. so many people's mission, at least part of their life, is to do the best job that they can of raising a child.
Yes.
That's such an important mission. If you can do that, you can look back on your life and with pride that you were able to bring a child up to adulthood without all these problems that you had.
Yes, I that's a gift from God. Thank you. Excuse me.
Well, we only got 30 seconds left in this program. It's been delightful to talk to you. And for the people that are on iTunes listening to my podcast, look for it under Alternative Health. And the title is Freedom from Addiction. And look up Zoe Nicholas and listen to her story. And Zoe, thanks for being on Share Your Mission today also.
Well, thank you very much, Wynn, and blessings to all your listeners, and may God help you in everything that you do. Blessings.
Thank you.
Thank you.